And just like that, you found us. My name is Ken, and I'm joined by my son, William. Welcome to our journey as we discuss music, life, and our shared love of coffee. This is Studio 36.
Hey, have we ever discussed the concept of mindset reset?
I think we might have once or twice.
Yeah. So a few years back, there was this program. It was a free program by Mel Robbins. It was a 35-day program called Mindset Reset.
Mm-hmm.
And it's intended, I think, to be done at the last few days of the year going into the new year. And what I really like about this program is that it focused on beating anxiety and giving your brain a reset. And what I mean by reset, as an example, if your mindset is that people think I'm stupid, then subconsciously your brain all day long is looking for evidence that people think you're stupid. So the mindset reset is that you put better thoughts in your mind to look for better evidence about who you are as a person and who you want to be. And so I like to go through a process each year around this time of the year to really think about and reflect on the year, go into the next year. It's not always a mindset reset, but it's a good program. And so I just was wondering if you had, do you have anything you do towards the end of the year thinking about the new year?
I don't plan my years ahead too much. I'm not a big dramatic change person. You know, the way that I change things is just over time. I try and make small changes. I do like reflecting on my past year, though, especially the past couple of years with the, you know, crazy odd years that we've had, you know, 2020, 2021. They've all been just weird.
There's been no years like them for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I try to reflect and figure out what I'm grateful for, what truly made my year the year that it was.
Well, we had so many topics this year of just how to feel alive or how to feel human.
Yeah.
And those have been really good discussions because as you start to reflect on those feelings that make you feel that way, then you try and put yourself in a situation where that can happen more often. And it's been a tough month. It's been tough to been a little overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes tough to find that joy and gratitude when you get so overwhelmed. But when you can give yourself just a pause, it's very rewarding to do that. And I like your idea, though, of breaking it down into smaller pieces. I will tell you from a goal setting perspective, that's how I do it. I usually start with the end result. Where do I want to be? How do I want to feel? What do I want to think?
Uh-huh.
And then I think about, well, what are going to be the best ways to get from point A to point B? And then I define, well, what's the habit I need to do at what cadence? And if I just do those habits and focus on that. So as an example, I don't have complex goals for physical activity anymore. It's just walk through the front door of the gym. That's mm-hmm. that's my measurement. And so it's simple. Either I do that or I don't do that. And I know when I do that, it's going to be a good day there.
Yeah.
But I do bring up mindset reset because we dusted that off, myself and my peers at work. We dusted that off this week.
Uh-huh.
And I did a mindset reset with my peer group at work. It was really fun because we kind of did it in a speed round fashion where there's like four sections and we hit the timer for 5 minutes on each section. So, because once you start getting detailed, it starts getting complex.
Mm-hmm.
If you go with the first thing that comes to your mind, that usually is the highest priority. And so that becomes really my gratitude for the week is I'm grateful that I have a peer team that's open to exploring personal growth with me. You know, we definitely do professional growth in the workplace, but personal growth is it's special when you can get in that place with the people you spend a lot of time with. So I'll just break down the four parts really quick. So the first part is really just a simple evaluation of the areas of your life. There's a number scale, and then you write one reason why you gave it that number. And those different areas in your life are your body, your work or school, money, relationships, and your self-worth. So we took 5 minutes, went through that. Then part two is a reflection of this year, and it's broken into what are three good things from this year? What are three low points from this year? What's one big lesson? What's one thing I'm proud of? And then what are my hopes going into the next year? Mm-hmm. So as an example, the first thing that came to mind on one of those was that I'm proud of what we've done here. We've set up a studio. We just jumped into it. We started a podcast, and here we are in episode 32. So there's an example of one of the things that I wrote down in that 5-minute period.
Yeah.
Part three is one thing you want to change in those areas again in your life going into the next year regarding body, work or school, money, relationships, and self-worth. And then part four is facing what scares you and what excites you about the changes that you noted. So you can really get in front of you what might get in the way or what might give you motivation to move forward in those. And so, and there was a bonus. There was a bonus question. The bonus question was asking someone how you can be a better father or a better friend or a better associate. And so you got the winning into that through a text of me texting you, how can I be a better father? So I appreciate you answering that question.
Yeah.
So anyways, again, I was just super energized, very grateful to do that exercise with my small group of peers. And that was the highlight of my week. It was a little shining moment of my week to be able to go through that exercise in a quick fashion with those colleagues.
Yeah, that's nice.
So so how about you? I know it's a busy time of year, but were you able to find some joy in your week or something to be grateful for?
Yeah, I mean, it has been a long week of work for me, not in a bad way necessarily, just like physically long. Like, I'm a part-time employee. I'm supposed to be working, 5 hours a day? And I think all of last week I was working 9 to 14 hour shifts, which is exhausting.
To be honest with you, I've never understood how they do that, because your brother works the same place, how part-timers work more than 40 hours a week. I don't know how that works out.
Yeah.
And then full-timers, of course, you know, work some crazy hours, especially this time of year.
Yeah. Right,
for package handling and delivery.
Yeah, it's a lot. There's some, I would say nights I'm coming home, but mornings I'm coming home and, you know, Emily's getting ready for work as I'm just pulling up. But, you know, to be able to get through that, I think the supervisors, my supervisors actually kind of stepped up this week, and it was really nice. When you're pulling those long shifts, there's not too much to look forward to normally. But, you know, when you get outside of a trailer, when your supervisor's standing there with a Chick-fil-A sandwich or something for you, it's a very nice thing. Like, it's a little thing, but
I think it's the little things that add up, though.
Yeah,
you know, it's the what are some examples of little things that happen in your workplace when you guys are just really working hard? What are little examples of things in addition to a delicious Chick-fil-A sandwich?
Well, I'm not gonna lie, a lot of them are food based. But also when the super, so technically, not technically, they definitely aren't supposed to. There's this whole contrast of us being union workers and the supervisors not being. So, you know, right. There's a whole handbook, like they're not even supposed to be touching any sort of box or anything or any sort of package. And, you know, when a supervisor just says, screw it, and hops in a trailer to help you out, that means something, because that can go against them. They can be grieved, and that can right. go on their record. But, you know,
yeah, I know that's a grievance process. And I will tell you, for those of us that aren't in a union or never have been in union type roles, it's hard for us to empathize or understand.
Yeah.
That. But for you guys who are in that space,
I still struggle to understand it. I mean, I've read through the handbook, which is something that most people don't do. But
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff in there.
Well, there's a lot of history to unions, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of good about unions. And then there's the other side that we see is the examples of, where it might be abused, those union policies. But they're there to protect,
mm-hmm.
right? To protect yeah. the employee.
But yeah, that was kind of my week.
It there you go. So your gratitude and your joy was a Chick-fil-A sandwich. Yeah. And if that's what it is, that's what it is on these hardworking days.
Ooh, and a McGriddle too. That was pretty nice.
You know, I don't think I've ever had one of those.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, they're delicious.
I don't know. Maybe occasionally an egg McMuffin. So, I think it's time. I think it's time for us to get into last week's listening experience. And so I think I went first last time. So why don't you go first this week and let me know what you thought about the album I gave you.
All right. So I listened to Lumineers' Cleopatra. I really enjoyed this album. Just getting straight into my first pick here. I think Sleep on the Floor was a great opening because it introduced this sound that is still like noticeably Lumineers, but it sounded like a more professionally done studio album, which I mean, you usually get after you have a
than the first one.
Yeah, but it didn't lose that character that the Lumineers have.
Yeah, there's a... probably say this wrong, but there's like a folksy feel to it. Like the bass drum is a simple bass drum, right? And it's one that they bring out on stage. It's not even the one that's with the drum set.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they hit the chords together, it just kind of has that great folksy feel to it.
Yeah, and I was fairly surprised to see that they didn't lose that sound going into a more produced studio environment, which that's why Sleep on the Floor is my first pick here, is it was just, I think it set the tone the right way. Going into the next one, I feel like this is another obvious choice, but Ophelia, it just had a beautiful melody that I really enjoyed. And then I'm always a sucker for emphasis on piano parts.
Right.
So yeah, that was just kind of a no-brainer pick for me.
Those are my top two.
But my overall pick has to go to My Eyes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I think this is just a sound that I haven't heard from the Lumineers, but I still really enjoyed it, which was kind of odd to me because I feel like going into an album where I was scared that they would lose that sound. And then ultimately my favorite song ended up being a song from them that doesn't really have that classic Lumineer sound to it.
Right.
But I just, you know, this song made me feel something. It's kind of a solemn, sad song, but, you know, no matter what, when a song is able to make me feel any sort of emotion, that makes me just appreciate music. And that made me appreciate this song.
Right. Well, you'll, if you haven't watched it yet, you should watch the Tiny Desk series, NPR, because I think Lumineers have one.
Okay.
But I think we put that on our list of concerts to go to.
Yeah.
I think that you would really enjoy a Lumineers concert. And so I think we'll pay attention to when they're in town. I think more recently, because they're pulling bigger venues now. I think more recently they come like to the Gorge.
Okay.
So that'd be a good, that'd be a good concert to go to.
No, totally.
Well, you gave me another album that I did not listen to any less than 20 times. it was a great new find that you found for me. You gave me The Sacred Souls. And so a little bit about the band, because this is not a band that's been around for a long time. However, they sound like they have been around for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
But they're in their 20s. They started in 2018. Alex Garcia on drums and Sal Simano on bass. I think Alex is 23 years old. And so they're in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And they grew up in California in Chula Vista. And those two needed a vocalist, so they found 29-year-old Josh Lane from Sacramento, and they were like a rocket in 3 years. I mean, this band just took off, and they've been characterized as Chicano soul music, which is interesting. And they have also been coined with a commitment to always being analog. So let's see if they can keep that going, to keep their music analog. They formed in 2019, performing in Riverside and San Diego, and I believe Los Angeles. And when they started playing, they landed a recording deal in just a month. So they weren't playing very long before they got their first recording deal. Staff writer for Pacific, Sarah Butler, had said that the band members have a long history with the analog format. They bond by listening to their favorite records together and enjoy the ritualistic element it takes to listen to vinyl. So I think that we have a lot in common with this band because we enjoy music on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And one other interesting tidbit that was attributed to Lane is that Lane has been said to be influenced by what he calls the Trinity of Soul, which is Marvin Gaye, Aretha Franklin, and Al Green. So I think that's kind of fun, that influence. And then the last little piece that I was able to dig up was the name, their name, The Sacred Souls, was inspired by Simano's father, who had the idea to assemble a 45s collectors group. You know, 45s, the little records.
Yeah.
Collectors group, and wanted to call it Sacred Souls Club. And so they were just inspired by that name, and then they landed on The Sacred Souls. So a very young band, both in how long they've been together, but also just simply in age.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a little bit about the album. This, of course, is their self-titled debut album. It was released in June of 2022, so it's only been around for less than a half year. And it was recorded in analog. I think with this particular album, we should get the vinyl on this one.
Okay.
And listen to it. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So a little bit about the songs. Again, I've listened to this album so many times. I've actively listened to it a handful of times, but I've listened to it several more times because this is great background music.
Yeah.
It's got that rhythm and blues. It's just great to play whenever you're doing something, you want to have some music in the background. I really enjoyed the opening track. I think it's the one that became quickly popular, Can I Call You Rose? It just has a real nostalgic feeling about it. I like the lyric, Can I Call You Rose? Because your fragrance takes over the room. It's just it's a sweet song, but again, it has that nostalgia to it. I also really liked Lady Love. I think Lady Love has a smooth R&B feeling of the 60s and 70s. And I still don't know how they've captured that sound because it truly feels like it's this is old music, but done really well.
I think the analog definitely does contribute a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. Lady Love is just, again, a great nostalgic song, and it's got great lyrics to it. I think one lyric in it, I've lost my one true love and I can't replace it. And so they write love stories too.
Yeah.
I think my pick, again, a love song. This is a love song album, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is.
My pick is Weak for Your Love. And I feel like it starts a little Billy Joel, but it's got a hint of Prince, yet influenced by the nostalgia of rhythm and blues. And so it's just got this great vibe to it because it just makes you think and absorb music in a much different way than other songs. So Weak for Your Love is my pick from that album. So with that, I think it's time for us to go on to this next week's listening experience. It's live week again, and you know how much I love live week. But I'm going to let you go first and give me your live album.
All right. So this week, I am giving you what I consider a total jam band. And they're playing live from a station that we know and that we've visited. And it's not KEXP, it's KEXP.
Yeah, I say KEXP. But maybe it's KEXP.
Yeah. At the beginning of this performance, they have a person that actually says it, and it's
called out the yep. call letters.
Yeah, they said all letters. So KEXP.
All right. KEXP. It's right there in Seattle Center. It's got the coffee shop in the front of it. We need to go back there.
Yeah, we do. But yeah, this is a total jam band. While they only play three songs, this performance carries on for about 45 minutes, but it doesn't really get boring to me. Usually I find when performances like that are going on, I kind of get bored, but I didn't really get bored of this one. So this band is called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a mouthful. That's going to take me a while to get that one out. And I guarantee you I'm going to mess it up next week.
But they kind of have this unique sound. It's not very focused on the lyrics. At least towards me, it's not really focused on the lyrics. They just enjoy playing their instruments. So that's what I like about this band. And, you know, that's really all I got to say. This performance was only about 2 months ago. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, you're giving me a jam band, and I think I'm going to touche. I'm going to give you one right back. This band that I'm giving you and live performance, this band was originally going to be called Dumbwella, but you know them as the Dave Matthews Band.
All right.
So Dave, mistakenly sometimes gets credit for the band because it's the Dave Matthews Band, right? It's named after him.
Uh-huh.
But it's really, there definitely is a difference between Dave Matthews, the solo artist, and the Dave Matthews Band, which is truly a team effort. In fact, Hal Carter talks about the band related to the name of the band. He says, as a matter of fact, that's the one thing about the band that everyone likes. There isn't a leader. Each one of us can express ourselves musically without being choked by a leader. Everybody can offer what they feel is going to enhance the music. So yeah, that's the main thing that all the guys, especially me, feel make this band happen. It's the freedom that we have to speak with our instruments. And I just like that they are really team focused as a band. And so this particular one, you're probably wondering which live album, because the Dave Matthews Band has over 85.
Yeah, live I was about albums. To say that's so, the majority of their catalog.
Yeah, there. How do you pick a live album from the Dave Matthews Band? So I'm going to go with one that was part of something that they were doing with PBS, and it is their Listener Supported album. So it's called Listener Supported. It was recorded on September 11th, 1999, at the Continental Airlines Arena in New Jersey. It was released in November of 99. And it was also filmed for a PBS In the Spotlight special. And the title, in fact, comes from the PBS phrase, supported by viewers like you. So I don't know if you've ever watched PBS, but they say that all the time. Supported by viewers like you. So this is called Listener Supported.
Is that why people have the PBS mugs? Do they get that for support?
Probably. Well, so, you know, public broadcasting station. So this is, they raise money, right? They raise money so that we can see great programming and they can give those artists or those performers or give a voice because it's a public broadcasting station or system. So on this particular live album, the band was joined by keyboardist Butch Taylor, and Butch has traveled with them a lot since. And also the Lovely Ladies. So you got Butch Taylor and the Lovely Ladies that joined the Dave Matthews Band in this album, in this concert. I like just a little bit about the songs because, of course, it's a concert. It's going to be full of great songs. I like how the concert starts. In fact, this is one of the things I like about how other concerts start as well, is it just has this slow build. And then it just slowly brings you into the music. And this is no different than that. They have a great intro. And it ultimately leads to Rapunzel, which I know is a song you like.
Yeah.
I like the version of number 41 in this concert. I think that song is a real defining song for this era of Dave Matthews Band. One of my personal favorites is on here, Jimmy Thing. I like Jimmy Thing. I like to play it on my guitar. Number 36 features the Lovely Ladies, so I think you're going to enjoy that.
Okay.
I know you'll enjoy number 40 that leads into Long Black Veil, of course, the Johnny Cash song, because I know you like that song. But my picks, and I have two of them, Don't Drink the Water, which you already know is one of my favorites. And then I always like when he ends his concerts with All Along the Watchtower, the Bob Dylan song, which of course Jimi Hendrix played at Woodstock. So I think that this particular album, because it was published, I think it is the live album that sent many fans on the path to ultimately go see Dave Matthews. And they are a jam band. They are a live band. And they're known for their unique set list for every night. You just don't know what you're going to get on the night you go, which is why at the Gorge they play three nights in a row. So mm-hmm. you got a better chance of hearing some of those songs you like the best.
Yeah.
So there you go. So this All week, right. I'm giving you listeners supported by the Dave Matthews Band in 1999. And you're giving me
King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard live on KEXP.
Awesome. We'll talk about it next week.
All right. Sounds good.